I'm Vin.
I'm sorry.
And this is Rush
Anthem.
Anthem is the name of the song.
For the big homie Nick.
Shout out to the big homie Nick. For timely topical political commentary, you can hit us up at Middle America with Vin and Sori. There are multiple ways to get your song reviewed. My favorite is a community option. $1 to get you into Patreon, where you, dear listener, get to team up with an alliance. It's really fun. You got a bunch of people together. They do their points and all that jazz, and then help us determine what song we listen to. Or, if you're like the big homie Nick, and you don't want to work with a bunch of people, and you're a rugged individualist like Sori, or a filthy capitalist like Sori, then, dear listener, you can do the fast pass option. 125 gets you straight to the head of the line. You do that 3 times fast, and you get pushed down to the $75 rate.
Yeah, don't listen to Vin. You want to get a song reacted to, and you want to get it out there much more quickly, and you have something to share, you have something to say, that's the way to do it. Don't let him tell you you're filthy.
All right. Rush Anthem, let's go. That band that has that crazy drummer, remember that drum solo? We'll be right back.
Does this mean that Anthem covered it? I mean, Anthrax covered it?
Yeah. Covered by Anthrax. Yeah.
I didn't know if Anthrax originally did it and then this Rush covered it.
Nope.
Okay.
Okay, so this line right here where he says, oh, okay. I know they've always told you that being selfish was wrong, yet it was for me, not you, I came to write this song. Which is the basic philosophy of Ayn Rand.
Tell me about this person.
Objective. So, Ayn Rand is an interesting philosopher that I first got introduced to, not in my, you know, quest to find if his philosophers like Bertrand Russell or Nietzsche. It was actually John Piper who introduced me to Ayn Rand like 11, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. So Ayn Rand has this basic philosophy that selfishness basically is the ultimate good. I'm like completely oversimplifying things. But of course, when you combine John Piper's Christian Hedonism, mm-hmm. then you see why Piper was attracted to Ayn Rand. Because Piper's philosophy is that all of us want happiness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of religion is designed to say, to deny yourself happiness mm-hmm. for the sake of some form of discipline so that you could say that you're whatever.
Yeah.
And what he sees from the Bible is that you are to deny certain things because they rob you of higher joys.
Right.
So there's temporary joy in, you know, some sexual gratification, but you get more longer-lasting, deeper joy if you can remain faithful to your wife. Mm-hmm. Right? So Piper sees a self-interest in not sinning. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you talk about Jesus offers rewards. He talks about rewards. If you do this, you'll get that. You do this, you'll get that.
Yep.
Paul talks about it being faithful in the faith. He's got a crown of righteousness, yada, yada, yada. And so Piper despised the sort of, he's still alive, bless God, but he despises a sort of religious attitude of, you know, he calls it mercenary worship, where you're basically saying, I get no joy from worshiping God, but I'm going to worship God because I'm a good Christian.
Yeah.
But really, worshiping God is treachery, but I'm doing it as a sacrifice, and you really have to discipline yourself to worship God.
Uh-huh.
Piper's saying, no, like, you have a self-interest in worshiping God, and that's not bad. Of course, as a Christian, Piper has to kind of remix it and say, you know, we judge a good person. You judge the goodness or the evil of a person by what makes them happy. So it's not so much that they're sacrificial, but like, so for example, a person who sacrifices their children for crack, we say that person is bad.
Yeah.
Because we say, you're wrong to sacrifice your children for crack.
Right.
But a person who sacrificed, you know, the whole trolley dilemma, let's say there's some iteration of the trolley dilemma, and you've got your six kids, and there's 6 million people that will die if you don't sacrifice your six kids, then we look at you as if you take joy in sacrificing your kids so that 6 million people can live, we say you're a good person. If you take joy in sacrificing your kids...
I'm gonna say right here, I'm a bad person.
I am too. But I'm talking about people's estimation of people, which is, in Piper's mind, proves Ayn Rand to be true, in a sense. Because if you took the most possible...
I don't think that somebody would look at that situation. I see where you're going with it, but I don't think that somebody would look at that situation and say that mom is bad for choosing her six kids over those people.
No, I think
that if she chose the people over her six kids, they would say she was a really, like, outstanding person.
Right, that's not the argument. The argument would be, if a person looked at crack or their kids and said, I will find more long-term satisfaction in, or more joy, or more reward, the internal reward system, I would find more joy in sacrificing my kids for this crack, we would say that that's a bad person.
Yeah.
But people can't control what they take joy in. It's not like that's a switch. Whereas in the second scenario, if that same mother would say, I love my kids, but I would take more joy in saving 6 million people's other kids than just my six, we would say, that's an exceptionally good person. Well, she can't control that she feels that way.
Yeah.
She has no control over that. So we're not really saying that the act is virtuous. What we're saying is what she takes the most joy in itself is virtuous.
Yeah, but I don't think I agree with you that you can't choose what you find joy in. I think that, you know, for instance, let's say the alcoholic, he finds joy in his drink. You know what I mean? He wants that drink. But like the first time that you, like, I think that there are certain there are certain joys that when you feed them and they're negative ones, that you're giving yourself a palate for those things. And so then you desire those things more and you feel like they bring you more joy. And they're actually deceptive joy because there are other joys that are higher, but you can't taste them because
why did the guy get to the point of alcoholism?
I mean, there could be bunches of reasons.
The core of it, the feeling that he gets when he ingests the alcohol, is something that's more important to him than his family or everything else. He can't control that feeling he gets when he's drunk. He can control getting drunk, but he cannot control loving the feeling of being drunk. He can't control that. If he could, we would have no rehab, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because in rehab, people are not saying, I'm here to change that I enjoy being drunk. What they're saying is, I'm here to change my inclinations because I enjoy being an alcoholic. I enjoy some aspect of it. So mm-hmm. it's a very, very complex, you know, moral system that she has. But basically, they got super meta here because what he's saying is, they've always told you that selfishness was wrong. But it was for me, not you, I came to write the song. I'm doing something that millions of people will enjoy, right? And I think that's the point. Millions of people are going to enjoy this song, and they wrote it in 1975. Mm-hmm. So in 2020, you know, I don't know how many years, that's 45 years later, people are still going to enjoy the song. But his initial motive was self-oriented. It was for himself.
He's
proving Ayn Rand's point, like,
yeah.
Being ultimately selfish is not necessarily bad.
Right.
Steve Jobs wasn't giving away iPhones. And, of course, she immigrated to America. So, obviously, a capitalist, capitalism fits right into Ayn Rand's, you know, philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because her philosophy is saying, no, selfishness is not always destructive. There are a lot of times that selfishness, and she meant it in the most technical sense possible, where you're thinking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can take the term selfishness as a philosophical position and not a moral one, that's where she's at. She's saying, look, whatever makes you happy is what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And many times what makes you happy benefits other people. So these guys are attracted mm-hmm. to music. They can't control that.
They can't
control that they're lovers of music. That drummer can't control that he's obsessive about the art form and that he just happens to be gifted. None of these guys can control it. So they're pursuing something that was already, this is where, I think, I'm pretty sure she was an atheist, but like this is where Piper's, you know, Christianity kind of fills in a bunch of those holes.
Because
she never answers the question, why are people happy? Why is Steve Jobs happy
yeah.
with creating?
Yeah.
Why is Rush happy with creating? And then why is it that it's very strange that many times what people are most passionate about is also what they're most gifted in? And sometimes when those two converge, you get a LeBron James, a Michael Jordan, a Steve Jobs, the drummer from this band. This is really interesting because, like, I'm listening to this. This is the only band I listen to where, like, I'm listening for the drums first. Them and Tool.
Uh-huh.
But Maynard's voice is so powerful
that,
you know,
I'm
you switch
yeah.
between the two. But the drumming in Tool has always been. So anyway, I thought that this was like a crazy meta moment that a lot of people probably didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like stepping outside of the song and saying, hey, this is true. My
yeah.
selfishness has benefited millions of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always talk about like how, you know, the husband who, you know, delivers a bunch of roses and a bear and a balloon to his wife.
He did that for me a couple
days
ago.
Because he wants the 3 seconds of her being happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a selfish motive. I want to see you have that, you know, because you're completely surprised, left field, there's no anniversary, there's no special occasion, there's no fight, there's no, just randomly, boom, here's some flowers. Like, that was a very selfish act in the philosophical sense because I love seeing you happy like that.
Mm-hmm.
right? So it's still a, it's still coming from a self-motivated perspective. But of course, that gets judged as a good act because what makes myself happy is your happiness. And that's how we judge that a good person is good, is that a good person is happy in the happiness of other people. Mm-hmm. A bad person is happy at the distress of other people. So it's not necessarily...
So you've been both good and bad this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, that's...
the Schadenfreude.
Those are the little holes that Piper fills in to Ayn Rand's philosophy.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
Where he's able to provide a philosophical framework.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to one of my Buddhist friends, like, no, in Buddhism, the goal is to reach nirvana. And I'm like, yeah, but you want to reach nirvana. So it's still a desire. Like, even the desire to rid yourself of all desires is still a desire.
Oh my gosh. You're right.
Like, I want to rid myself of desire. Good, that's a want that you have.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the end of the day, it's still a self-motivated.
Yeah.
It's still self-motivated.
Yeah, that's...
So, it's impossible to avoid.
Yeah.
But, of course, there's also a dark side to that, obviously, which you know, if you scroll up here, and I'm not sure how much of this they actually believe, but when it says, live for yourself, there's no one else more worth living for, begging hands and bleeding hearts will only cry out for more, right? Like, that's her philosophy. Like, live for yourself, no one else is more worth living for, obviously, and we would say live for Christ, right? And the reason I would say live for, you know, as Christians, the reason we say live for Christ is not because, like, you're downgrading, like, you have to leave living for yourself, now you have to downgrade yourself and live for Christ. Mm-hmm. The argument is, you'll actually attain more deeper, long-range joy and happiness if you live for Christ than yourself. Mm-hmm. Which, ironically enough, is still a self-motivated act, right? So, and the Bible is explicit about this. You know, Isaiah 66, why are you spending your wealth on bread that doesn't satisfy? And, yeah. You know, come to me and drink and eat and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. I'll give you the greatest wine and all this. He's like, you're starving for water. I have wine for you. Why? What are you doing?
Yep.
And he's asking.
Come unto me, all you who are weak and heavy laden.
Right, and I'll give you rest. Yes. That's self-motivation.
Yeah.
He's saying, man, life sucks for you. You're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. How about you come to me, mm-hmm. and things will go a lot easier for you. Mm-hmm. And then, so there's an Ayn Randian sort of, you know, spirituality to Jesus, but it when you hear the second line, begging hands and bleeding hearts will only cry out for more, if you read Atlas Shrugged, which is her kind of like most famous work, which she wasn't really appreciated for initially, but if you, there's actually a movie, Atlas Shrugged, but I feel like they did a terrible job with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just...
Is it boring?
You know what I think? I just think that she was such a complex and nuanced philosopher that to try to put that out, all the nuances on the big screen, I just think it's very, very hard without being a heavily narrated movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the closest to... I would have liked if the people who did Cloud Atlas... Remember that one, Cloud Atlas? It was... If those people would have done Atlas Shrugged, it would have been a lot better, I think.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's she would be a card-carrying sort of bleeding hearts. They don't, you know, you help people, you give them help and all that, they're gonna be in a state of, there's always going to be more, you know?
Some people.
That was her philosophy, you know, and of course, when you look at certain government programs, it certainly has been the case where, you know, you have people that stay on government programs longer than they need to, right? And so what she's saying is, look, ultimately that's for the worse. If you create a society where people say nobody's going to help you, then people are going to grind much harder, mm-hmm. right? But then it doesn't take into account, well, what about people who are, you know, crazy, disabled or whatever, it kind of creates this almost like eugenic type of environment,
yeah.
where only the fit survive. Of course, again, she was an atheist, I'm pretty sure, so that's question is kind of... Yeah. So, like I said, there's a bunch of, I don't want to say holes, but like gaps, you know, in thinking, but I think that's pretty much what the song is, you know, is about. Bleeding hearts will only cry out for more. And you see this played out in the political realm where you have people saying, you know, hey, we gotta do something. People are poor. People are... I was reading this story on Facebook, and somebody was interviewed a homeless person in England. And the homeless person was saying that they were tired and that they were lonely or something like that. And like, I was looking at the comment stream, and people were like, this is terrible, this is an atrocity. I'm like, we drive by people like this every day in America. Like, but their mindset is like, how could we let this happen in our country? It's very strange. It's very, very strange. So, you know, I think a lot of our, you know, the whole pick yourself up by your bootstraps and all that, I think Ayn Rand was sort of like the philosophical... She's kind of like nuclear technology. You know, where, like, if it falls in the hands of the right people...
Oh, yeah.
You can convert it into something great and redemptive, yeah. But it falls into the hands of the wrong people, it's extremely... Look out. It's extremely, yeah, destructive. Because there is no... I think if you...
Yeah,
if you,
I just don't understand what you do with that for, like, somebody that's bad. Like, if you do the thing that brings you the most joy, what if you're a serial killer? Or what if you... You know what I mean? Like, what? How does that work?
Well, then the...
Those situations.
Well, the argument would be the society is most concerned with the individual self-preservation, so that guy's not going to be around for long. So, like, you're not going to avoid a serial killer in any... society that you set up. But her philosophy would be, but the society as a whole would get rid of that person, and they get rid of the person for the same reason. Most people don't get rid of serial killers because of a moral issue. They get rid of serial killers because of a self-preservation issue.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Right? Yeah. Like, and that's the reason, by the way, and I know, we know this because people are obsessed with serial killers. And people, look at the horror genre. A lot of the horror genre is what? What is Jason? What is... These are serial killers. So we obviously don't have a moral aversion to serial killers because we've immortalized them in our media. Okay. But we don't like serial killers in real life because they affect our sense of personal security. So that's why... And you know, you see this, like, worked out all over the place in a whole bunch of different situations. If something is happening to a woman and there's a bad situation, people are going to hear it and they're not going to get involved because it looks ugly and it sounds ugly.
Yeah.
And girl could have died out there. I mean, she... So, like, I think her thing is like, let's just look at the objective truth. The objective truth is everybody's motivated by the self.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we embrace that instead of creating all these strange structures that are built to deny it? And why are you trying to deny that you're selfish? For what reason? Of course, I would say, well, they have a desire to be looked upon a certain way, and they can't choose it. So, you know, it goes around in a circle. But you seem very troubled.
Well, it's just because I don't think that I necessarily agree with
it. I mean, I don't.
In the sense of, like, you know, like you said, the flowers thing, like, you've bought yourself stuff off Amazon, stuff that you were very excited to receive.
Uh-huh.
But what's more exciting for you, when you got that stuff or when you give something to somebody else? For me, if I find the perfect thing for myself on Amazon, I'm happy to get that. I can't wait to open the package. But it doesn't compare to getting the perfect thing for somebody else. That level of joy is just different. It's better.
Well, but that's still a self-motivated type of thing. It's still a self issue.
Yeah, but I feel like people could, like, no, okay, so that goes back to your thing of depending on whose hands it lands in. Because I'm like, if you're just doing stuff for yourself out of selfishness.
Well, I think her philosophy would stay, that's all you're going to do. There's no if, you are going to do that.
Yeah.
So it's best that you just, you know, absorb it and own it.
Yeah.
Instead of pretending like you're not. That's the logic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, one of these really came home to me because I was talking to a guy who, you know, something had happened, people had got lost and mission changed and went from a, you know, sort of defensive recovery mission versus a whatever. And two of his friends went down, I mean, blaze of glory. But, you know, Medal of Honor, all that. But they, you know, they died.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him because, you know, he was kind of mentoring me. And I was like, geez, man. I was like, what's going on in the person? And he was going to be there in that spot that they were going to be. But he was like 90 clicks away. Mm. So it just, and this stuff just happens bang, bang, like very, very quickly. And so one of the guys got killed, and the guy went back, and he checked it, put it on burst, gave it to the guy, and said, hey, anybody, you know, whatever, I'm going back out there. And he, like, these guys are like the pinnacle of war fighters. Like, these guys, I'm telling you, they're like the... And so anyway, I'm talking to this guy, and I'm like, so he was like, yeah, you know, he had a count of how many people were there, because he had birds up in the sky and all this, and he was like, just breaking his neck to get there. And he was basic. So I said, you were basically breaking your neck to go die? And he said, yeah, I wanted to be with those guys. This dude just had a daughter. He had a daughter at home. And he said, listen, if I didn't run as hard and as fast and fight as hard as I could to get to those guys, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So he's like, those guys went there not because they were going to lay down their lives for their brother. It's they couldn't live with themselves if they didn't attempt to lay down their lives for their brother.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, holy shit. He's like, in that situation, we're all dead. Like, that was the level of, like, and of course, again, that is a desire. He's saying, I can't live with myself if I don't go there. But we count a person with that kind of desire as a hero. Mm. So the trick isn't to say, oh, I don't have selfish desires. The trick is to say, I want to be a person who takes the most joy in the best of other people, even at the expense of myself. And that's circular, and that's where it becomes a righteous circle, and that's what it means to be a good person. So you've had other situations where shit was a lot less dire, mm-hmm. and dudes end up using their buddies as bulletproof vests. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've literally seen that too. So, and again, that's located in selfish desire. So it really just depends on, you know, what the locus of the person's happiness is, I think, is what makes a person good or bad. And of course, since we can't control those, all of us, from a Christian perspective, are at the mercy of God to reorder and reorient those things.
Yeah.
So Ayn Rand is extremely, extremely complex woman. And on the outset, it sounds crazy, but it really isn't, if you really, really think about it. But I think, you know, John Piper kind of closes some gaps for me, whereas, like, the stuff that's troubling you about it is the pre-John Piper remix, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Versus the, you know, whatever. So it's a good song. Love the drumming. The drumming was amazing. I mean, he was accenting, like, that opening riff. He was accenting the drum with the opening riff. Just, I know for drummers, probably basic stuff, but to me is pretty cool. Pretty cool. And then the little echo effect. You know, when you're writing music, there's so many things, like, available to you, especially with effects pedals and stuff like that. A lot of times, like, I wonder, I ask myself, like, how do you make those decisions?
Mm. I wasn't really a fan of what it sounded like, though. So it's gonna have to be a 7.2 for me.
Ah! A 9.7.
Sorry, Nick.
I started off with the drums first. So it's a 9.7. I started off with the drums first. And sonically, lyrically, what they did, all that, I loved it. And then I was catching some of the randisms in there. I thoroughly enjoyed the song. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the song. So it's a 9.7 for me.
There you have it.
Shout out to the big homie.
Nick.
There you are, dear listener. Vin out.
For you.
Gone.